Welcome back to the 50th anniversary Beatles show here on the Derek Hunter Show on WBAL. Joining me now is a man who was a part of the British invasion. He's got, you know his voice from I'm Into Something Good. I'm Henry VIII. Mrs. Brown, You've Got a Lovely Daughter, and many, many more. He's the lead singer of Herman's Hermits. His name is Peter Noon. Mr. Noon, welcome to the show.
Hey, nice to be here, Derek. It's a great anniversary, isn't it? And it was great for me because I was at school when the Beatles 50, when they played in Baltimore and all that trip there. We knew all about it.
What did it mean to you as an aspiring musician back in the UK? You guys came over shortly thereafter and were climbing the charts right after them. And nobody from the UK had ever really busted in the US before. So to see it happen and then to be a part of it shortly after that, what was that like?
Well, you know, because I was in a band, and an English band, and it was a very small scene. We kind of knew the Beatles in a musical kind. You know, we were aware of them, and we'd done concerts near them and with them, and met them in cafes in the middle of the night on the way to and from dates. But I was still at school, so I had no idea that all this was going on. I was a grammar school boy. I was kind of finished off my last year at school. And they opened this huge, huge market to the... I mean, people think the British invasion was America, but it was everywhere. It was Japan and Germany and France. No English people ever sold records anywhere except Australia and New Zealand and a bit in Canada. And suddenly the Beatles opened up the rest of the world to everybody because the music was so different and so good.
It was.
That we would just... The doors...
What was...
Everybody...
Sorry.
For me, Derek. Sorry, I'm trying... For me, Derek, I what happened was they were brilliant musicians. They were funny guys. They looked great, and they were eloquent. And I thought, well, I can do all that.
And you did. You did. When you guys came over, it was part of a wave. At the time, it had to be absolutely thrilling for you guys when you came over. But did you have any idea? Did you expect it to be a flash in the pan? Like, we've got a year, maybe two, and then the world will move on to something else? Or did it seem like bigger this time?
No, I think it always felt like, I think for every season of music business, whether it's now or then or 1950s, I think people always thought, well, I remember listening to a Buddy Holly interview where the interviewer asked him how long did he think rock and roll would last, and then Buddy Holly said at least until Christmas. And you know, I got a year. My dad arranged with Monsignor Duggan that I could have a year off school to have my music career.
How'd that work out again? I forget.
Well, I still owe that school a year. You know, it was the law in England as well, and somehow I managed to bypass it. One day I'll arrive at England at the airport and they'll arrest me and put me back in school for a year. You know, this is like some law that they had. But you know, the whole thing just was explosive because nobody... Think about it. We were all like the Sex Pistols. None of it had happened before.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I'd be in a room in England with the Beatles, just hanging around with all that was so fantastic about the Beatles. And someone would come in. I remember Vic Lewis, who was an old band leader from a very good English band before, you know, the ones that we replaced.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, hey, would you lads like to go to the Philippines? And the Beatles said, yeah, when? Now, you know, if you ask a musician any other time in period, would you like to go to the Philippines? They say, how much?
Yeah, exactly.
But it was just, when? Let's do all this stuff that's never been done before.
As best you can, Peter Noon of Herman's Hermits, no one will ever experience maybe a Justin Bieber for a little while or New Kids on the Block or Backstreet Boys, but the original crush of teen idoldom, you were right there. You know, posters and your records were hanging on girls' walls and everything. And more importantly, people just think, oh, the girls screamed at the Beatles. They screamed at all of you guys. What was that like? Aside from awesome.
Yeah, you know, awesome has been overused now. Now everything is awesome. But it was quite extraordinary because you have to remember that you go from being in a band that is kind of popular locally, in my case, around Ermston. Then bit by bit, we got to Liverpool and then Manchester and London, and we slowly grew. And I can remember the first time that one girl screamed and somebody looked at her like she was an idiot. So if you didn't have at least 100 people screaming, you would probably have got arrested. So it was sudden, and it was, you know, I'd been to concerts with the Beatles when they weren't famous, and then I went to concerts when they were famous. And, you know, I think they were better before they were famous because they were more chirpy, you know, that cheeky, chappy stuff between songs. Yeah. And once people started to scream, they had to cut all that out and just get on with the music, you know, and the shaking the leg and all that stuff. And I think the whole thing, for most entertainers, it's a little bit embarrassing, the screaming, you know. Mm. I can remember, like, in my sort of strange sense of humility, I go, oh, this is kind of silly. First of all, in my band, we chose a name that couldn't be confused with screaming. No girl's ever going to scream the word Herman. Well, they did.
They did, and nobody was named Herman.
Well, I was actually Herman originally. You know, the band, what happened was I had this TV show in England. That's how I got to know the Beatles, because they knew me from something else. So I was on this TV show, and when Herman Hermit started, I had to get a name that didn't connect me to that TV show, because that TV show was not cool. I played the 12-year-old son of a guy, you know, and it wasn't cool. So I became Pete Novak, and that morphed into Herman somehow. But that's got nothing to do with the Beatles. The Beatles just opened this opportunity for all the...
Do you think...
In England, even fashion, remember, people... Ask people, you know, suddenly the miniskirt came with that, and Twiggy was in America getting $100,000 dates.
Do you think, Peter Noon, that anybody but the Beatles could have led the British invasion?
There's never been anything quite like it, has there? You know, usually there's a couple of boring people in every band, or, you know, I mean, you know, the Stones could have probably done it, but when you see an interview with the Stones, they aren't brilliant. And the Beatles always are. Every time you see an interview from them, they're either humorous, eloquent, they have a point of view, they're charming. And, you know, that English cheeky chappy stuff is huge all over the world. You know, people like that character.
Right.
No. You know, there's the Bond, James Bond, or there's the Beatles, Bong, what's a Bong?
No, it really is. And you guys, why was it so pent up, this great creative musical explosion that happened from the UK then? Why did it happen there? Because before 62, really, when the music started to be recorded, it was skiffle music, which is not exactly... It was a hit at the time in the UK, and we can see why now it didn't make it anywhere. But somehow, from that came... rock and roll as we still know it today. How did that happen?
You know, what it was that it, for a while, everybody in England was copying, all the records in the charts were copies of American records. And then the Beatles came along, and if you notice, the Beatles' first record is loaded up with all songs that by American artists. They did, you know, Mr. Moonlight and stuff like that in the first album. Mm. But they started to write a couple of their own songs, and they forced their management against every... You remember, they were supposed to do How Do You Do It, and they gave it away to Jerry and the Pacemakers, who had a number one.
Yeah.
But the Beatles still insisted on being the creators and the owners of their product, because they knew how valuable that was, you know, in the career. And so for a while, all those people in England were just copying American music. And then we got this American music, and with 100 times more enthusiasm than the creators, because... The creators weren't actually self-contained operations like the Beatles and Herman Hermits and the Rolling Stones and all those bands. We all grew up in a van together. Mm. And, you know, the Coasters did, you know, Sweets for My Sweet, but the version by the Searchers, which was another British, a forgotten British invasion band, their version was so much more spirited because the Coasters weren't really anything. Somebody did the track, somebody did the thing, somebody did the thing, somebody did the mix. We got independence. We were, you know, I think there's three bands, Beatles, Herman Hermits, and Rolling Stones, who we gave the label the record that we wanted to put them out. That was first. Nobody had ever done that before. Somebody did all that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so we got control of our own destinies, and that was much more. And, of course, everybody in England was far more enthusiastic. It wasn't cool to play cool. The worst thing that you could play was nonchalant.
Right.
And if you think about American music at the time, you know, it was all beach party bingo and kind of a bit nonchalant. It wasn't really, there was only Elvis Presley and Little Richard and those guys really going for it that had any enthusiasm for it.
Right. It was all sort of safe, sort of corporate white covers of real old R&B, excellent, great songs. And you guys did them the way that, with the spirit that they should have had, that they had originally. Yeah. You removed the corporatism of it.
And you know, it's a great, it's a good Scrabble word, but Panglossian describes it everything perfectly, because we were naively optimistic. It was naive to believe that we could sell millions of records, but we thought we did, you know. But I know that my story is the same as the Beatles. All we wanted was to hear our songs on the radio. Just the first time you hear your song on the radio is a massive deal.
What is that feeling like? Because every once in a while they replay my show at night, and I've only been doing this for 6 months, and it's still weird to hear a commercial for me. But I can't imagine it being, you know, you're hearing yourself sing and you're seeing other people in other cars doing. I imagine it happens while driving in a car. Does it sneak up on you? Do you pull over to the side of the road? Do you yell? Do you scream? What do you do the first time you hear yourself on the radio?
Well, the first time, what happened was we were in this horrible club, which was our local club that we played in every week. And we had our real fans there, you know, girls who went every week to see Herman's Hermit. And while we were in the kitchen changing, can you imagine in those days you changed in the kitchen? They didn't even give you a men's room to change in. So we were in the kitchen getting changed, and on the radio in the kitchen, our record disc jockey at 5:30. Remember, in England, there was only one radio station.
Yeah.
There weren't hundreds of radio stations. There was only one. If you got on that radio station, you joined Buddy Holly, Elvis Presley, Jerry Lee Lewis, Elvis. You know, you joined the big team. You're now in the major leagues, just to be played on the radio. So, and then the idea, once you've had that, and then you want the record in the charts, then you want the record, then because of the Beatles, we wanted more. We wanted the record in the American charts and the German charts and the French charts. And you know what? It all was open, just like America. People forget when they talk about the British invasion. It was everywhere. Everywhere where you were allowed to listen to the radio, there was a British invasion.
Yeah, in some places where you weren't allowed. Now, Peter Noone, what you knew the Beatles, you referenced hanging out with them in hotel rooms and just basically getting to know them as people. What were they like when there weren't cameras around?
Well, they were typical, normal British working class boys, you know, with different education, different, you know, some people are grammar school boys and some people aren't, you know, like me and the Stones and Paul McCartney and John Lennon would be called grammar school boys. We're a little bit overeducated for the position of guitar player.
Mm.
So there's that version going on. But remember, we all had a magical thing in common, which was that it was like being in a union of musicians. We weren't, remember that, massive part of the British invasion was that we were not competition for each other.
Right.
Everybody in that British invasion, if you think about it, was unique. The Who isn't like Herman's Hermit or the Stones or the Kinks and the Beatles. And the Beatles aren't like the Stones and the Kinks and the Who. And everybody was different. And the Moody Blues weren't like anybody. So, and Herman's Hermit, who would do a song, Mrs. Brown, You Got a Lovely Daughter? Only Herman's Hermit could have done that.
Mm-hmm.
So we were all sort of rooting for each other. And I would, and you know, once I was like at this TV show and John Lennon walks over to me and I can see he's going to tell me something. And I don't know what it is because he was very funny. And he would say stuff like, hey, Herman, that's a nice suit. Do they make it in your size? You know, and funny stuff like that. But he walks over and say, hey, Herman, I see your record, that Heartbeat, Can't You Hear My Heartbeat, whatever it's called, is number one in America. And I was so shocked that he even knew that I said, thank you. Which was the stupidest thing that you could possibly say. Why, thank you. I mean, it walks off and I go, oh, man, you lost an opportunity of starting a conversation. But, you know, I would find myself in hundreds of times just on the same show as the Beatles, like TV shows, Top of the Pops in England, hundreds of times. You know, I stood in the audience with the audience and watched the Beatles at least 100 times in different versions, like before they made it, in a field near my grandmother's house, they played a concert in 1963, before they really made it, you know, and my friend and I walked across this field to see them, and my friend quit the band that day. The Beatles were so good that he quit show business.
Wow.
He left the band. I'm done. That's it. I'm quitting.
Now, last question, sir. You've been involved in music ever since 1963. 63 or 64, and you were right there at the first crashing waves. Have you ever seen anything like that since? That sort of that, not only just the invasion side, but the creativity that flowed from those bands.
Nah, you know, and I'm sad to say that it probably can't happen again because it's sort of cosmic. It was like when Ringo showed up, it made the band different.
Mm-hmm.
He gave them something to play off. And before that, they were kind of dragging a guy along. And that takes, once everybody on stage is in it, you know, it's like, what? I can't remember. Paul might have said it. You know, once everybody has the same vision on stage, you know, that we got to get it better than, you know, we have to give 100%, then it all kind of sits in place. You know, if somebody on the stage is stoned, a band starts off in a van and you get rid of the guy who's got gas and the guy who does too many drugs and the guy who does before you make it.
Right.
Well, the Beatles had this long period before they made it where they just got better and better and better and better. And I don't think people get that opportunity anymore. I don't think there are 150 concerts that a band can do, because financially it's important. Remember, before booze came along and became the thing that paid for rock and roll, people went to clubs with no booze and saw bands. Kids were, if you look at those videos of the Cavern, all the people in the Cavern, including me, are 13. They're not 21 now. Now they're all 22-year-olds in a nightclub watching a new band.
Right.
18-plus and students from university. Well, it was kids once upon a time. Music was for youth. Now youth are watching it on TV, and it's already made it by the time it's on TV. So there's no local scene to grow from. You know, there's not like in, say, Baltimore. Maybe there is. But in Liverpool, it started again. There's now a new local scene as kids are looking for opportunities to get away from their computers and go and interact with other humans. And it includes dancing.
Yeah.
And if you're going to have dancing, you need a band sometimes. People get sick of the DJ.
Yeah, maybe the internet age has sort of killed that sort of scene that used to exist. You're absolutely right. Peter Noonan, I wish I had more time. I could talk to you forever about it. I really appreciate the time that you spared for me today. Talk about the Beatles. You can find more about Peter Noonan, what he's up to, at PeterNoonan.com. Thank you so much, sir. It's a thrill to talk to you.
Hey, great talking to you, and it's such a thrill to talk about such a magical musical bit.
I appreciate you, sir. You have a good day.
Thank you. Bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, Peter Noonan of Herman's Hermits, one of the British Invasion bands, big bands. If you look at the songs that they did, the songs that they had, the great stuff. They're on my phone. They're on my iPhone. Find them out for yourself. We'll be right back. Continue this after this break.